Good morning. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Chrissy Mernon, and my guest is Jackie E. Pena. She is a program specialist and law enforcement liaison for Mothers Against Drunk Driving, the South Texas office. Every 2 minutes, someone is injured in a drunk driving crash. This is a 30-minute program. So while we are talking around the country, 15 people are injured in a drunk driving crash. And every 51 minutes, someone is killed in a drunk driving crash. So that's almost 24 people every day in America. And drunk driving is still the number one cause of death on our roads. And it affects 2 out of 3 people in their lifetime, the ripple effect of drunk driving. Mothers Against Drunk Driving has been working to stop drunk driving. It's a huge task, and April is National Alcohol Awareness Month. Tell me what you do at MAD.
I'm a program specialist, so what I deal with is traffic safety and also educating parents and youth about underage drinking prevention and getting in a car with a drinking driver.
How did you wind up at MAD? I know a lot of people have a personal reason, sometimes a personal tragedy, for becoming associated with MAD.
So fortunately, I have not had a personal tragedy. I have had an experience. My husband and I were driving on 151, exiting 410, and we came across a wrong way driver. It was 12:30 in the morning, and if there would have been someone next to us and we couldn't swerve, we would have been impacted by this person. So we're not 100% sure that he was impaired, but most likely we're exiting and he's coming onto 151. So yeah, I mean, that's the closest we've been. Thankfully, no one was hurt, but I just joined MAD because I want to make a difference, you know, especially growing up in a Hispanic family, Hispanic culture here in San Antonio, alcohol, it's not something that your parents talk to you about. Sometimes it's like, oh, you're old enough, you know, you could drink. They might see that there's not going to be any consequences coming from it. So just educating parents about having those conversations with your children, because it's not a one-time conversation. It's a conversation that has to be ongoing. And these presentations, programs that we have, they're available to parents at no charge. They're free, and English and Spanish, and materials are available in both languages. And I also provide the presentations in both languages. That way, if there's any questions, sometimes, like I said, you're from Hispanic culture and you don't want to ask certain things or say certain things because you might be afraid of the consequences.
Mm-hmm. So what age should parents start talking to children about alcohol?
It varies, but research shows that children start thinking about alcohol as early as age 8.
Eight.
Would put you in about third grade, give or take. I was just looking at some of the latest videos that MAD released. They're done by Dr. Robert Teresi. He's a researcher at Penn State University. And he started talking about first grade, second grade, and third grade kids. I mean, having access to alcohol and drinking. So every parent is different, but I think the earlier you have those conversations, the better trust you build in your child as well. And having that communication when they have questions about certain things that they see. Nowadays, alcohol is marketed, branded to young kids. Sometimes you're watching TV, you're watching videos online, social media postings, and I'm pretty sure that kids have access to that and will have questions.
So third grade, I'm still stunned by that, because you think they're so innocent that really, you know, you hear a lot of problems start in middle school.
Yes.
Middle school is a really challenging time for kids because of all of the social pressures going on, what's going on with them. So you need to get to them before middle school.
Yes. So I've done a lot of presentations with elementary school parents. And sometimes, you know, you have your younger kids, but they also have older kids. And it's never too late to have that conversation. One of the videos I was watching, it's like, oh, it's too late. My teen has already been drinking. Again, it's never too late. Okay, so they started drinking. What can we do about it? Mm-hmm. Is there a problem they're having? But here also in Bexar County in San Antonio, it shows that kids start drinking as early as age 11.
11. And where are 11-year-old kids getting alcohol?
So most of the time, it's most accessible at home. So that's where kids are getting alcohol or going to a friend's house. But still, that friend is a child of a parent. So that's where they're getting their alcohol from. Mm-hmm.
What is MAD's position on alcohol?
We're not prohibitionist. we're not saying don't drink. We're just saying don't drink and drive. You know, always have that plan. Have that way of getting home safely, whether you're using public transportation, you're using a ride share, or you're having a sober driver drive you home, not the person that's the least intoxicated.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been with MAD?
I've been with MAD almost 2 years. So I know San Antonio ranks in the top three, competing with Dallas, Fort Worth, and Houston for the most drunk driving crashes and arrest. And Texas competes with California and Florida with the most drunk driving crashes as well. So it's not somewhere where we want to be.
No. And why is that? You know, it's like, okay, California's big. Why are our three states the top three?
Like you said, maybe it's the size of it, or it's just there's much more people that live in the state. So there's more people that are driving. Mm-hmm. We are on the road every day with at least 300,000 drunk drivers every day.
Oh my gosh.
So we share the road. So not just in Texas, this is just nationwide, but yeah. I'm guessing it's the population.
Yeah. Now, so do you understand drunk driving? Do you understand how it occurs? Or what do you know about drunk driving, how it occurs?
People become intoxicated, and sometimes everybody's perception of intoxication is differently. So one might think, oh, I'm not intoxicated, but if you measure your blood alcohol content and if you're above that 0.08, you're legally intoxicated. So sometimes it's just people don't want to leave their vehicle. They want to get home, or maybe they're those types of intoxicated people that get angry and fight. And if you try to stop them, the consequences could be worse. So there's many reasons that people drive drunk. I mean, most of the time, if you start drinking at an early age, you become dependent on alcohol. Mm-hmm. And that's why one of the questions is like, does your child have an alcohol problem? So there's no right answer, because a lot of people get behind a wheel for so many reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you're below 0.8, the law says you're not impaired. But I know there's a talk of, you know, it should be lower, like 0.5.
So I know Utah was the first state to pass the 0.05 blood alcohol content level last year. But the rest of the United States is at a 0.08.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about what you see as far as, you know, the damage and destruction caused by drunk drivers, because you see that every day and you're working to avoid it every
yes.
day.
So it's just heartbreaking on the impact that one drunk driving crash. And at BAD, we don't like to call it an accident. It's a crash, because accidents are unavoidable. And when you're getting behind a wheel, you're choosing to drive intoxicated, choosing to drive drunk. That's 100% preventable choice that you're making. So that's why we call them crashes. And it's just, you know, the victim that is hurt or killed, the family, their loved ones. I mean, even the family of the person that committed the offense, they all become involved in this, you know, this pain. It's just, so you might not have lost your loved one, but now they're going to have to go, you know, they're arrested. And then if they go to trial, and then if they are found guilty and incarcerated, it's just the repercussions that one choice that could have been avoided, but you decided to make, what the impact it has. Mm-hmm. And just the impact it also has on the economy.
Mm-hmm. So the personal pain, I noticed on your website that MAD has a VIP program, Victim Impact Panels. Tell me about that.
So our Victim Impact Panels are live. We're one of the few in the city. So we have victims and or offenders that have been impacted by a drunk driving crash. So we will have our victims that speak to offenders. So everybody that gets a DWI here in Bexar County, as well as all over the state, are mandated to take a victim impact panel class. It's a 2-hour class. Even if your offense gets reduced to a lesser charge, you still have to take a victim impact panel class. You get to listen firsthand to the stories of people that have lost a loved one or have been injured. And sometimes it's more, you know, you could slap them with a fine, you could have them do community service, but hearing where they could have ended up or that they could have lost someone themselves. And just hearing this from our victims, it's the majority, it makes a difference. Some people, to them, it doesn't matter. You know, sometimes it's their second, third DWI. So it's just like, again, they might have a problem with alcohol. And we also have offenders that have injured or killed someone that share their story. And we have one that just had the class on Saturday. And I like the way he closes his story. It's like, I might serve my probation. I might pay my fine. I might complete all my community service hours, but that is not going to bring this person back. I'm going to continue living my life. I'm going to have this, but nothing that I do is ever going to bring the person that I killed back.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just something very impactful.
Yeah.
I believe for the people to hear. I mean, we all make mistakes and we're not passing judgment on them or anything like that. It's just like we want them to learn from their mistakes. We want them to know that there are other ways of getting home.
Mm-hmm.
So
you're just increasing awareness. And then when you put a person in front of you, you see the humanness, their pain, their bad decision, and their advice. And so you're hoping that people take that to heart and follow that advice, that they're impacted by.
Yes.
By that person's
exactly.
situation. Yeah. So tell me about, you know, like the first victim impact panel you went to, you know, because I'm sure it was profound.
The first one I went to, I was doing a presentation, the same presentation I'll be doing this afternoon, and I had no idea what to expect. I mean, obviously he had lost someone, but I just didn't know at what point of the story I was going to hear it. So he starts off his story. It's one of our victims, Eddie. And he starts his story by how he grew up, like his childhood, his parents, you know, moving from house to house. And when he thought to himself, when I grow up, when I get married, when I have kids, I want to stay in one house. I want them to be raised there. He tells the story of how he met his wife and, you know, having their first child and their second and, you know, dealing with health problems and so forth, and, you know, having the four kids and enjoying summer vacation and going to the pool and then going home and they were hit by a drunk driver. So there was four people in the vehicle and this person was coming airborne on 410 and by Palo Alto, Highway 16 area. And she landed on top of them. So just the way he tells his story, the way he shares it, the way it just, you know, it hits that climax and then it brings you back down, like, wow. Like, just, in a matter of seconds, your life is turned upside down. And when I first heard this, it was also to a class of Bexar County officers training, doing their standard field sobriety testing training and just seeing their expression as well and how impactful that was on them. Like, oh, crap, you know, like he lost his son and his neighbor's son in a matter of seconds. Mm-hmm. And it's been over 10 years since that. But every time he tells his story, it just takes me back. And every time I hear his story, it feels like I'm hearing it for the first time.
Mm-hmm. And why does, I think, and I'm familiar with that crash. Mm-hmm. And I remember, oh, how awful it was. And because I believe it was a young woman who
yes,
was very drunk.
A young woman, very drunk.
And hit them. But since then, he is a volunteer with MAD because he is trying to stop drunk driving.
Yes.
So what, you know, what drives him?
What drives him is, you know, he's passionate about making an impact just on one person. And he's always like, hey, do you have any things coming up? Presentations at the base. I just did a presentation for 300 Navy sailors that are training to be military police. And they're all young kids. So having them hear their his story, doing presentations at high schools. And he just wants to bring awareness about being intoxicated and having that plan and not getting in that vehicle, you know, because again, you never know, you could hurt yourself or you could end up hurting others. And it's a life-altering choice.
That's true. I think everybody loses in a situation like that. It's just everybody. Yeah.
Everybody. Like I said, it's not just the victims that you hurt or killed, but you have to think about your family, your spouse, your kids, and how that's going to be the
hurting
impact
them.
On them.
Yeah. Our guest this morning is Jackie Epina. She is the program specialist and law enforcement liaison with Mothers Against Drunk Driving, the South Texas office. April is National Alcohol Awareness Month because April is a time of year. Okay, you know, we have Easter, we have Fiesta, and I know our law enforcement community works so hard to prevent drunk driving during Fiesta. And then after Fiesta, we have, you know, look, it's prom season, summer, Memorial Day, summer. And then every weekend, you know, summer events, 4th of July. So we just have a lot of celebrations coming
yes,
up.
A lot.
So Fiesta, what's your advice for people during Fiesta?
During Fiesta. So April is Alcohol Awareness Month. And in April, we also have our Power Talk 21 Day. That is April 21st. It's our national day for parents to have those conversations with their kids about alcohol, underage drinking, and getting in a vehicle with a drinking driver. So my advice during Fiesta, have a plan. Plan ahead. You know, if you know where you're going, take an Uber, take a Lyft, take a cab, have that person that is going to be your sober ride, not your least intoxicated. Take public transportation. That's my advice. It's, again, we're not saying don't drink. We're saying just don't drink and drive. And especially with our teenagers, you know, especially during Fiesta, there's going to be a lot more undercover officers, TABC out there. So usually we get a lot of minor in possessions and minor in consumptions that come do community service or do our victim impact panels mm-hmm. as well. So they need to be aware that their underage drinking has a lot of consequences as well. You have to think how, even if it's a Class C misdemeanor offense, it could affect you if you want to apply for college, if you want to apply for financial aid, if you want to get a certain job and there's something on your record, it's going to affect you. So also, I've told other youth that come into our office, you need to be vigilant and aware that you're drinking, so something can be put in your drink and that could lead to other consequences such as sexual assaults and violence and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So there's, I just think about a bad decision and the horrible consequences from a bad decision. When you talk to teenagers, when you talk to students and kids, what's their attitude?
Well, some of them, you know, it's just like, oh, you're saying something to me like, oh, we're still going to drink. I mean, some of their attitudes like that. Some of them, they're like, okay, they take in the information. They want to hear what we have to say. And there's some that it's just like not going to phase mm-hmm. them. Mm-hmm. But sometimes once I get into statistics or showing them crash scenes or showing them consequences or showing them the penalties of what can happen, then it kind of changes their outlook. And, you know, underage drinking is a problem we all need to work together to resolve because it directly impacts the future of our future leaders in our country. Again, they might be listening like, oh, like I want to do this or I want to go into the military. Or if you have a record, they're not going to take you. You know, even though you're a teenager, or you're youth, it's still going to take some time and money to take that off your record.
Mm-hmm. So what are the statistics that you brought along statistics with you today?
So some of the statistics that I have and that I tell them, it's that teen alcohol use kills about 4,300 people each year. And that's more than any illegal drug combined. 2 out of 3 underage drinking deaths do not involve a vehicle. So other ways, homicides, suicides, falls, alcohol poisonings, drownings, fires. So those are other things. So only 32% are related to a vehicle and the other 68% fall under those other categories.
So careless behavior or criminal behavior resulting from impaired judgment.
Yes.
Ooh.
About 30% of 8th graders have tried alcohol.
30%.
And almost half of all 10th graders drink alcohol.
So 8th, 9th, 10th grade. So 8th grade, 30%. One out of three kids has tried alcohol. Because you said most of them get it in their home. Mm-hmm. So really, parents kind of need to keep an eye on, you know, I'm having a flashback to when I was a kid. Sure, you sneak it. Your parents don't know. You drink something out of the bottle. You put water. You know, all those things you do. To and your parents don't notice. Your parents don't notice.
Yeah, they don't notice because, you know, like you said, you might sneak some or you might then try to fill it up with something else, or they don't realize how much they had in their fridge and you're throwing it away or hiding it or disposing it of it elsewhere where they can't easily see that you drank it. Or at times parents are aware, but they just don't think it's a problem and they decide to ignore it. So it's one of the stories that one of our parents shared. Like, she knows that her son had a problem, but she never said anything about it. And that story can be found on our Power of Youth. It's the 411 on teen drinking. Mm-hmm. And all this can be found at mad.org/Power of Youth.
Go through it.
She shares, his name was Casey. So everyone knew Casey Taylor, considered him a good kid. He was on the wrestling team, played football, sang in the choir, played in the marching band, and still managed to stay on the honor roll. Casey was 18 the night he and his friend stopped at a drive-up liquor store that didn't card underage buyers. The boys bought rum and decided it would be fun to see how much just one person could chug. That person was my son, Casey. Around noon the next day, a police officer came to his parents' door to give them the awful news that Casey had died. 2 days later, they got the coroner's report. His blood alcohol content was 0.41, more than five times the illegal limit for someone over 21 to drive drunk. Once you get more into Casey's story, mom shares that she had found empty bottles of rum in their garage before, but she never addressed it. Instead of addressing it, she just threw them away.
You know what? As a parent, you don't know what to do. You think it'll go away, or you think it's harmless fun. Who could foresee what was going to happen?
Yeah. So again, not all teens are drinking.
You said, yeah, by 8th grade, one out of three has tried alcohol. Mm-hmm. By 10th grade, half have tried alcohol.
And also, only 15% of teens binge drink. So even though I'm giving you those statistics, also only 1 in 100 parents believe that their child drinks.
Oh, so we've got a real disconnect as far as what's going on and what parents
believe. Yes, because, you know, I'm giving you these statistics, but then if you ask 100 parents, only one of them will think that their child drinks. I had a presentation last year at municipal court, and I had some parents, and I'm like, have your children tried alcohol? Because they were there with them. And they're like, no. And then their kids are, yes. And then they're like, where did you have this?
Right. So where did this? Where?
They said they had it at a quinceañera, where the parents were there. And the children are there, but the parents had no idea that their child had tried alcohol. So they
right
were both
under their nose.
Right under their nose.
Uh-huh. And you're in municipal court because?
So I was there. I used to work in municipal court with juvenile court. So I was there also educating parents about underage drinking. So they have programs that instead of paying a fine, you have to do certain classes. So providing education to them, you know, because we'll have your MIPs, MICs, truancy, things like that.
My MIP,
minor in possession, and minor in consumption of alcohol.
So once they get caught, they have to go to court.
They have to go to court and do certain programs.
Mm-hmm. And do you think the programs are better than paying a fine?
I believe they make a difference, because if you just pay a fine, it's like you're going to do it again. It's just like, oh, I'm just going to spend money.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have them do certain classes and certain programs, it's like, oh, I have to give up a Saturday, or I have to give up an evening. And it's just like listening to stories or sharing examples or having other kids relate to the issues they're dealing with also maybe can be better for them.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're with MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, but also drug driving is a big problem, correct? And that's something y'all work against as well?
Yeah, so our mission at MAD is, you know, to help end drunk driving, but fight drug driving as well. It's something that we're seeing more and more now. a person is not just having alcohol in their system, but also drugs, whether it's illegal or prescription drugs. So it's something that we're seeing more. So that's why we're also, that's part of our mission as well.
Mm-hmm. And so where are people getting the drugs from? And you mentioned some are prescription drugs, so we know where they get those. Mm-hmm.
So the prescription drugs, you know, it might be theirs, it might be their parents, it might be a friend's. And illegal drugs, well, there's various ways that they're obtaining these illegal drugs.
In your time at MAD, what do you think it's going to take to end this problem? A change in society as far as how we celebrate responsibly?
Yeah, celebrating responsibly. Again, we're not saying don't drink. With teens, you know, underage drinking, we have a zero tolerance at MAD. And everywhere. So like you said earlier, April, it's like we have fiesta, then it's prom season, it's graduation season, it's summer vacation, it's 4th of July, and it keeps going. And we just want, you know, these teens to know that their choices that they're making and not getting in a vehicle with them. So we just want them to know, you know, their brain is not fully developed until the early 20s. That is why also the drinking age was raised, the minimum drinking age was raised to 21. Because when you're younger, you're letting your emotions make decisions for you, not like really
your fully
thinking,
developed brain.
Yes, your fully developed brain, thinking the judgment, thinking of the consequences. You're going on emotion instead of thinking of everything that lies ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So adolescent drinkers perform worse in school and are more likely to fall behind. Like you said, they have more increased risk of social problems, depression, suicidal thoughts. So just letting also these teenagers know that they can talk to their parents. You know, I know it's not an easy thing to do. It's easier said than done. But also these parents need to have trust that if your child is ever in a dangerous situation, what can they do? Can they call you to come pick them up? Would you rather get that call at 3 a.m? Hey, I made some bad choices. Can you pick me up? Or have a police officer knock at your door and letting you know that something happened to your child?
Right. Because, you know, I think if it were my son and I got a call like that he'd probably get chewed out all the way home. But I also understand that's not the time to do it. It's like, look, I will get you home, and then we'll deal with the problem later when everybody has a clear head.
That's the perfect thing that you just said, because I ask parents these questions. So if your child asked you to pick them up, what would happen on the way back home? Oh, I'd be yelling at them and I'd be telling them this. And I'm like, again, they're intoxicated. So maybe that's not the best choice, the best time to have that conversation with them, because in the morning, they're not going to remember any of this.
Right. And you're infuriated. You're infuriated. So you might calm down a little, they'll sober up, and then you can deal with it rationally.
Yes.
Rather than emotionally when everyone is in a different place in their head. Yeah. So really, I guess, you know, so as we close today, our guest is Jackie Epina. She's the program specialist and law enforcement liaison for Mothers Against Drunk Driving, the South Texas office. She does presentations at schools. And so if someone's interested in hearing from you.
If anyone is interested in having presentations for parents or youth, they could contact our office. Our phone number is 210-349-0200. My name is Jackie. They could ask for me. And also, if they want to see more statistics, more information, all these booklets, pamphlets, the videos I was talking about are available online. They could go to www.madd.org/powerofparents, and they can see all that information. Again, it's available in English and in Spanish.
Your message to parents is your kids are doing more than you think.
Your kids are doing more than you think. I mean, 74% of children say that their parents are the number one influence on them about, you know, choosing to drink. So these kids are listening. You might think they're not, but they are paying attention to what you do and what you say. So, you know, just have those conversations with your children. Let them know that if anything, they could count on you and talk to you, and you can decide what type of consequences they're having. Also online, it shows the difference. Every parent is different. Every parent has a different style. style of parenting, there's no right or wrong answer. But that you could also find online, you know, what's the best way to approach certain scenarios, certain situations, because our teens are dealing with a lot. So we are not fully aware of everything they do on a daily basis, but there's these things online. It could show you how to approach them and talk to them.
And, you know, from visiting with you this morning, Jackie, I get, okay, 8 is when you should start. 8 years old, because at 8 years old, they have an awareness.
I did a presentation and she had a 6-year-old. And her 6-year-old, she had to have that conversation with her 6-year-old because his dad was going to drive him back home and his dad was intoxicated. So again, kids start thinking as early as age 8, but you can have a different scenario where they're being
put in a dangerous situation
at a younger age.
Hey, thanks for coming by this morning, Jackie Epina from MAD.
Thank you for having me.